put it into its box and opened another box and took out another decorated, beautiful black cape and put it on Mona again with his blessed hand, and this time again asked Mona, "Do you like it?" And Mona said, "It is beautiful, but what is the meaning of this?" Baha'u'llah said, "This is a robe of sorrow." Mona said, "Although it is also beautiful, but I don't like sorrow." Once again, Baha'u'llah took the cape off, put it back into its box, and opened another one. This time, he took out a blue cape and put it on Mona, who once again asked Baha'u'llah its meaning. He replied that this was the robe of service. Mona cheerfully said, "Yes, I like this one the best. I love to serve, and I chose this one." At that moment, Baha'u'llah stood next to Mona and called for someone named Mr. Mehdi to join them for a group photograph. At that moment, Mona woke up and couldn't go back to sleep for the rest of the night. In the morning, when she told her father about the dream and asked who this Mr. Mehdi was, her father brought out a picture of an earlier martyr, Mr. Mehdi Anvari, and showed it to her. To her surprise, she found them to be one and the same. When Mona told me of this dream in prison, I teased her, saying, "How did you dare tell Baha'u'llah that you like this one or don't like that one?" Although she may not have been ready for martyrdom in the beginning, but Mona's imprisonment had a dramatic effect on her spirit. This effect was so strong that on several occasions she showed her mother how she was going to march to the field of martyrdom and how she would kiss the hanging noose. Mona had another beautiful dream while in prison. She saw herself in the presence of Abdu'l-Bahá pleading and saying, "The prince are worried. Please grant us steadfastness so we can endure." And Abdu'l-Bahá smiled, saying, "Be confident, Mona. We have granted it." Abdu'l-Bahá repeated this same phrase 3 times. Mona loved her father dearly. She always used to say, "I'm afraid they will kill my father first, and I couldn't bear that." But as she had feared, her father was martyred 3 months before her. She herself was hanged along with 9 other Baha'i women on June 18, 1983. Mona had told her mother during their last visit, "Tonight we are going to the presence of the Blessed Beauty." The courage and spirit of Mona's mother after the execution of her husband and daughter amazed everyone. After Mona's execution, she visited the morgue, kissed Mona's face twice, as well as other martyrs. Later, she reported that they all had a serene look and a smile on their faces. She said that the faces of some were badly injured, apparently due to having been dragged on the ground after the execution. After Mona I would like to tell you of another Baha'i martyr of Shiraz, Hidayat Siyavashi. But first, I would like to quote a sentence from a recent message of the Universal House of Justice addressed to the youth throughout the world, so you can see for yourself how Hidayat was an example of it. Recent martyrdom, courageous steadfast youth in Shiraz, seen inauguration mission martyr prophet, reminiscent act, valor, youthful, immortal, heroic age. When we all hear the Bab's name, we automatically picture those spirited youth at his time, who cherish no desire in their hearts except that of offering their lives in the path of their beloved. Among them we recall Quddus, who at the scene of his martyrdom wished his mother to be present to witness what he called his marriage ceremony. A century had passed, and now a whole generation of youth who have learned about such tales of devotion only through the pages of history become the very players in this same historic drama. Hidayat was 20 years old, single, and the only son to his parents. When they expressed the hope that he would get married, he always used to say, "There is a time for everything." He was born to a devoted Baha'i family in Jordan. Later, they moved to Iran and resided as pioneers in Yazd and Kermanshah. Their house was always a center of Baha'i hospitality, service, and fireside. This fact was later listed as one of the criminal charges against him at his trial. Hidayat finished his education in Shiraz and pioneered to a nearby town. Soon, other youth from Shiraz followed his footsteps and a local assembly was formed in that town. However, after the revolution, pressures of religious residues and persecution forced him to return to Shiraz. It didn't take him long to resume his activities again. Once again, his home became the center of various Baha'i community services, as well as housing the local community files and documents. After his martyrdom, the paper said that his house was a Baha'i center and a storehouse of Baha'i materials. At first, he was a member of several service committees, but later became an assembly member. He was extremely kind and would always do his utmost to help those in distress. In fact, the night he was arrested, he had gone out to help the family of one of the earlier martyrs. It was on his way back that Hidayat and two other Baha'i youth accompanying him were stopped by the Revolutionary Guard. They were arrested automatically when it became known that they were Baha'is. That night, they were first taken to prison and severely beaten to make them recant their faith. Eventually, around 4 a.m., when none of them recanted, the guard, frustrated by their lack of success, took Hidayat to his house for further investigation. His mother, anxious and fearful, opened the door. When Hidayat saw the puzzled look on his mother's face, he assured her very calmly, saying, "Don't worry, mother. They have only come to search the house." The search resulted in an accumulation of piles of Baha'i books as the so-called evidence of their allegations. His trial didn't last more than a few minutes. The religious judge asked Hidayat, "Are you Baha'i?" Hidayat said, "Yes." Judge asked, "Will you convert to Islam?" Hidayat said, "No." Judge asked again. Hidayat said, "No." Then he pronounced his death sentence and said, "Not only will we kill you, but we will kill all the Baha'is. Only we will do it one at a time, so all other countries will not raise their voices in protest." Hidayat asked in return, "Assuming you do eliminate all the Baha'is in Iran, what can you do about the rest of the Baha'is in the world?" The judge answered, "We have plans for them too." Hidayat's mother, who was a perfect example of steadfastness and devotion, always used to say that during their visiting hours, it's better to say during visiting minutes, their conversation was only about steadfastness and firmness in the cause. Hidayat would tell her, "I am firm, so you should be too. Don't concern yourself, mother. Whatever happens is the will of God and best for everyone." His spiritual character and kindness had even affected the prison guard. This reminds me of another incident which occurred while he was in prison. One day, the prison guard decided to auction the fruit which prisoners had grown in the yard for the benefit of the prison house. To the surprise of them all, Hidayat and Dr. Ahrari, who later became a martyr in Shiraz, purchased most of them. The guards were very pleased by this action and rewarded them with a private visit with their two families. For a long time, Hidayat felt in his heart that martyrdom was destined for him. This was mostly because of a dream he had after he played an important role in the burial ceremony of three earlier martyrs in Shiraz. He had dreamed that Mr. Wahdat, one of the three martyrs, came back to visit him, kissing him and taking his hand. The next morning, he told his parents about the dream and said it is a sign that he was destined to be a martyr. I recall another incident in the prison which showed his intense desire and longing for the fulfillment of his destiny. When they called Dr. Ahrari, one of his cellmates, for execution, Hidayat embraced Dr. Ahrari very tightly, saying, "It is finally our turn." But when the guards appeared, they separated them, taking only Dr. Ahrari. And Hidayat smiled sadly and said, "It appears as though one must have connections even with God to take us youth seriously." But in his heart, he was confident that his name would also be called very soon. His mother had mentioned that Hidayat had sent all his clothes and personal belongings home, saying, "There is no need for this here any longer." One night, one of his Baha'i servants dreamed that Baha'u'llah entered their cell, carrying a red flower in his hand and saying, "I have brought this flower for one of you." In the morning, when he related his dream to the other prisoners, they all looked at each other, wondering whose turn it would be that day. Except for Hidayat, who laughed and said, "Now it is my turn." And indeed, that afternoon, Hidayat was busy cleaning and sweeping the cells and hallways as a part of his prison duties. And when he heard his name on the prison loudspeaker, a silence overtook the prison. Hidayat returned to his cell and said goodbye to his friends. Another youth who had been arrested at the same time threw himself at Hidayat's feet and cried bitterly, "We were brought together and we should live together." Eventually, they were separated with difficulty by one of the guards. Hidayat was so popular among all the prisoners that when he was taken out of his cell and into the hallway, all the other prisoners on various levels of the prison gathered outside, saying his name, waving at him, and for several times repeating his name. The prison officials had to warn everyone over the loudspeakers. To the prisoners to be quiet and return to their cells. But they ignored the order. First, he was led to the prison office for a few minutes and then returned back to his cell. His sense of humor and firmness didn't waver to the last minute. He laughed and said, "Let's have one more cup of tea before I leave." Then, turning to his Baha'i friends, he said, "By the way, does anyone have any message for Baha'u'llah?" Zarin Mughini was another martyr. I knew Zarin from the first day of her arrival in Shiraz, when her family moved to a house near Bob's house. Her Baha'i service in Shiraz also started from that day. She was a member of different committees, such as youth committee, discipline committee, and the university committee. She also taught Baha'i children's classes, and her classes was the best one in Shiraz. In fact, if we wanted to find an example of cheerfulness, zeal, and devotion, she would be the one. She loved teaching the faith, and her home was always given over to the service of the faith. She was always looking for opportunities to teach the faith. And because of her fine education and charming speech, she was very successful at it. Even when she was in prison, she often had religious discussions with her interrogator. Now I would like to tell you a little bit about these interrogations. The prisoner was usually led into a cold room and kept there blind.